Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. President Trump campaigned heavily in coal country in 2016, promising to return coal jobs to the communities that had relied on them for generations. The Trump administration took a step closer to making good on that promise with a plan to undo the Obama-era Clean Power Plan. EPA Director Scott Pruitt on Monday described the Obama administration's efforts to an audience in Hazard, Kentucky.
The past administration was unapologetic. They were using every bit of power, every bit of authority to use the EPA to pick winners and losers and how we generate electricity in this country. And that's wrong.
The coal industry has cheered the plan rollback of the Clean Power Plan, but many believe that market forces, not regulations, are the real challenge for coal interests. Coming up, we'll hear from a spokesman for those interests and from the Ohio Environmental Council. Joining us now by phone is reporter for Midwest Energy News, Kathy Ann Kowalski. Welcome back, Kathy Ann.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You know, I said the Trump administration took a step closer to making good on that promise to return jobs to coal country, but that's probably the least of the things that are assured in this process, right?
Pretty much. There's both legal and practical implications to the actions that have been taken. And as a practical matter, a lot of people are saying that really jobs are not likely to come back, largely because of competition and mechanization.
Right. The jobs that people did mining coal have been replaced with machines.
Right. In large part.
Let's talk about the process for repealing the Clean Power Plan. It has not been repealed, but this has been a step in that direction. What are the mechanics there?
Okay, the mechanics are something called notice and comment rulemaking. So just as the original plan was subjected to a notice that the rule would go in and people had a chance to comment and then EPA considered those comments, the same kind of process is being repeated again. So people have 60 days to comment on the proposed repeal. They can request a hearing within 15 days if you want. EPA will review those. Then if it still wants to repeal, which I think is likely, it will promulgate a new rule repealing the old rule, and then we'll have more appeals and litigation.
What are your estimates on how long you'll be covering this process as a reporter?
My grandson could be going to college.
Wow. And how much of the Clean Power Plan actually went into effect by now?
That was stayed by the D.C. That was stayed actually by the Supreme Court last year while people were litigating it. So none of it has actually gone into effect, although some states had begun preparations and moving towards it.
What was the plan supposed to achieve? What were the dream scenario for this?
Generally, the plan would have cut greenhouse gas emissions from the energy sector by about one-third. And states would have had flexibility in terms of how to do that, what mix they wanted to use, how they would offset it. Opponents said that that would be devastating to the coal industry. Supporters said that would help get greenhouse gases out of the atmosphere and help mitigate climate change.
It never went into effect, so I guess there's that makes me ask the next question is how many jobs were actually lost so far because of the Clean Energy Plan?
It's hard to say.
I mean, Clean Power Plan,
The Clean Power Plan. Jobs lost in the coal industry, you really can't, I don't think you can really attribute any. Jobs lost in the clean energy sector, again, I think it's that you might not have been adding yet more jobs than you are already adding. But the clean energy sector as a whole in the nation, I think, was growing around 5 to 7% last year, which was higher than most other sectors.
And is there any estimated impact on the clean energy sector then if and when this law is repealed?
When the law is repealed, I think that a lot of the older utilities hope to do business as business as usual. But again, you've got a lot of market moves that are coming in, especially in Ohio, where you have a number of plants converting to natural gas. And you also have a move to basically get rid of the restrictive wind setbacks because more companies coming into the state want to have an option for more renewable net energy.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the effort by the Trump administration to repeal the Obama-era clean power plan. They've taken the first step in that process. We await about 60 days of public comment at this point. But as my guest, Kathy Ann Kowalski of Midwest Energy News said, this could go on for years. I have no idea how old her grandkids are or if they're even born yet. I guess we should get some context there, huh?
He's going to be 3 next month.
Okay. So when he's in college, they may still be litigating this issue. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page and post a question or comment there. Coming up, we're going to hear from the coal industry. We're also going to hear from the Ohio Environmental Council and get feedback from them about what they think about this. What exactly did the coal industry oppose about the clean power plan?
Basically, and this is actually pretty much in Pruitt's notice of repeal from yesterday. Basically, they were saying that they wanted to have at the fence line limits rather than a limit that would apply to the whole industry based on the grid. They objected that it would be resulting in generation shifting, in other words, moving more electric generation from coal to natural gas or renewables. And they objected with how the costs were calculated because they felt that any health benefits should be discounted very heavily.
What do you mean by health benefits should be discounted?
Basically, over the term that the Clean Power Plan would be implemented, you would have less greenhouse gases, but you would also have less particulate emissions and less emissions of other pollutants that have been linked to heart disease, and other cardiovascular disease, lung disease such as asthma and so forth. And EPA, when it promulgates a rule, is required to take account of those benefits when it does a cost-benefit analysis.
And the coal industry objected to that?
The coal industry said that that was too generous, and they felt that this was too speculative and therefore should be discounted.
As far as the repeal goes, that could be a done deal, but is there any obligation on the part of the Trump administration to replace the Clean Power Plan with something?
Essentially, there is language from the Supreme Court in prior cases that said greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide, for example, had to be considered by U.S. EPA for regulation. There was a prior finding by EPA that greenhouse gases should be regulated. So right now, there is still some obligation on the part of the energy to do something. The agency could try to revisit that, but it's a little more of an uphill battle because there's Supreme Court precedent. But in any case, it's not at all clear when the agency would do something. So there's yet more delay built in.
And when you said you may use the phrase at the fence line, that they prefer at the fence line regulation, what do you mean, state by state?
No, they mean if we have, let's say, a First Energy plant or an AEP plant or any kind of a power plant, they want plant by plant regulations so that you're not taking account of anything else that can be done. The response to that from the other side is to say, look, number one, that's not the way this industry operates. It operates on a grid basis. And number two, they view it as flexibility. If a coal-fired power plant can meet the limitations with clean coal technology, and prior cases have said EPA is within its authority to have technology forcing regulations. In other words, you may not have it yet, but you better figure out how to do it. So advocates who are in favor of the rule said this provides the flexibility, and it's not an error of law for EPA to say, however you meet, it's up to you. You know, just because you don't like having a certain option does not mean that you can object to it.
And when you talk about generation shifting, as you mentioned, a lot of power plants have already shifted for market reasons to natural gas. What are the economics of them switching back if, you know, if coal becomes possibly cheaper because of this?
It's not projected to do that anytime soon. I think it's unlikely that they would do it.
Even if it did?
Even if it did, because you'd still have a pretty heavy investment.
As far as replacing the regulations, there's no way to pressure the Trump administration. They can take their time, particularly as long as it's in litigation, right?
Yeah. I mean, they buy some time that way. There have been lawsuits before where citizens groups have pressured EPA to actually move ahead and do regulation, so you can have an order from a court. But it's kind of like the old, I think it was Andrew Jackson who said, you know, it's, you know, the court's order, but they don't get to enforce it. We do.
And also, tell me about the role of state subsidies for power plants in Ohio. What's going on there?
Okay, so for the renewable, you're talking about the renewable portfolio standards and
right.
energy efficiency standards.
Yeah.
There's a those came back into force this year, but on a somewhat weaker basis after revisions in 2014. There's currently a bill pending that was passed by the Ohio House and is now in the Ohio Senate that would pretty much make the renewable portfolio standards voluntary and would further weaken the energy efficiency standards. Governor Kasich has made statements that suggest he would not be in favor of that. And I can see some legislators saying that repeal of the Clean Power Plan boosts the desirability of getting rid of the standards. But as a practical matter, these standards predated the Clean Power Plan by, I think, about 6-7 years.
And they were said to have put Ohio in a very good situation when it came to the Clean Power Plan. It was right on target.
Correct. Yeah, we were pretty much right on target. We would have gotten most of the way there. So if we keep the standards, it's not so much a matter now without a Clean Power Plan of meeting a particular deadline for that, but you'd still get the benefit of stimulating jobs in the solar and wind industries. You'd still get the health benefits that people have been talking about. So there are still, and you'd have, attracting jobs and companies to Ohio who have said they want to have huge amounts of their electricity come from renewable sources.
We are talking about the Clean Power Plan. The Trump administration this week started the process of repealing the Clean Power Plan. That's a major initiative of the Obama administration. Cut greenhouse gases, though that was the goal of it. Cut energy emissions in the United States by 1/3.
Yes.
We will, my guest right now is Kathy Ann Kowalski. She's a reporter for Midwest Energy News. Coming up, we're going to hear from the National Mining Association. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. This week, EPA Director Scott Pruitt announced that he would begin the process of repealing the Obama-era Clean Power Plan. It was a law intended to shift states away from coal to curb greenhouse gas emissions. The coal industry has claimed the policy was unlawful, that it violated states' rights, and was yet another example of federal overreach. Still with us is reporter for Midwest Energy News, Kathy Ann Kowalski. Coming up, we'll hear from the Ohio Environmental Council, which opposes the planned repeal. Joining us now by phone is the Senior Vice President of Regulatory Affairs for the National Mining Association, Bruce Watzman. Thanks for joining us today.
Good morning. Thanks for inviting me.
You're pleased with this turn of events?
Yeah, we are. We welcome this. We think that the repeal of this will ensure that affordable and reliable baseload electricity is available for ratepayers, electric consumers across the country.
There's the idea that it's already available because of cheap natural gas. That's the market force some people believe is causing, pains, aches and pains for the coal industry.
Well, I think that's part of it, but you can't deny the fact that the regulatory hand has played a role in this. The coal industry wants to compete and is willing to compete in a marketplace where the government doesn't pick winners and losers, and unfortunately, that's what we saw in the previous administration more and more often.
Do you believe that by repealing the Obama-era regulations that the coal industry will be revived?
Well, we're seeing a revival already. Coal production is up this year over last year, and what we know is that there were about 240 million tons, 27,000 direct jobs in the coal industry, and if you carry that through the economy, about 100,000 jobs that were at risk had the Clean Power Plan, in fact, gone into effect.
How do you suss out which jobs are at risk or have been lost because of the Clean Power Plan versus the competition from natural gas?
Well, you know, when the utilities announce closures of plants, mm-hmm. They will often attach it to a particular reason. Now, they don't always do that. But in announcing planned closures, they'll often say that this is the result of, you know, adverse regulatory requirements. So in large part, we rely upon the utilities, the information provided by utilities in quantifying the impacts.
Do you disagree that, I mean, or what do you think? What is the National Mining Association's view on the environmental impact of burning coal?
Well, you have to remember that since 1970, criteria pollutants, those are the ones that are regulated by EPA, have dropped more than 70%. And in some cases, those have dropped by over 90%. So the burning of coal has gotten cleaner over time and will continue to do so as we see a new generation of plants, ultra-supercritical and supercritical plants, come online and replace the plants that were built 30, 40, or 50 years ago or more.
Kathy Ann Kowalski, what do we know about the larger effort to build better plants for burning coal?
I'm actually not aware of people planning to build a larger coal plant in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the plants that we've seen notices for here tend to be for natural gas plants. And Ohio has a fair number of somewhat older plants. For example, there are bills pending in the state house and legislature that would subsidize two 1950s era plants from the Ohio Valley Electric Cooperative by basically guaranteeing sales of the four utilities share power from them. So it's not something I'm seeing happen here.
Where are you seeing that, Bruce Watzman?
Well, I'm not seeing it today, but let's be clear. Kathy Ann is right. I mean, there are no new coal plants on the immediate horizon. But part of that, again, evolves from regulatory requirements. You know, the Clean Power Plan had two elements to it: controls on existing sources, those plants that are built today utilizing fossil fuels, and controls on new plants. The action that the EPA took and is taking deals with the existing sources. There is still on the books unreasonable, unfeasible, and not requirements that are not technologically achievable today. So that will be the second phase that we hope EPA deals with. And once they do, our expectation is that we'll see utility operators looking towards coal generation again. Right now, they can't meet the new source requirements. So there is no, there are no new coal plants on the books.
You said second phase. Where in what law is that, or regulation is that embedded?
Well, that was as I said, the Clean Power Plan had two elements: one dealing with existing sources,
and that's okay.
The action that the EPA administrator announced yesterday, and the second element dealing with new plants. That is still on the books. That's been litigated. That has stayed in the court pending EPA determination on how they are going to proceed.
Kathy Ann Kowalski, what about the new plants and regulations on those? What's the prognosis for that going forward, given what happened this week?
I think Bruce is correct there. That's all stayed, so the administration can either leave it all stayed because it's in limbo and say, you know, rather than start extra proceedings, we'll just hang on and wait, or it can follow up with another repeal rule. I'm not sure what they're going to do.
And Bruce Watzman, I mean, it's for planning purposes, that doesn't sound very, very good, to just have it stayed and not have anything set in stone.
Well, I think that the administration is looking at it and just hasn't made a determination on how they're going to proceed. Remember, there were a lot of issues that they had to deal with immediately in a short period of time, and they're working their way through those, and that's one of those issues.
How should the law be replaced, or should it, Bruce Watzman?
Well, I think that's an open question, and that's why the EPA is going to come out with an advance notice of proposed rulemaking, and they say that they will do that in short order. To seek the views of the regulated community, to seek the views of stakeholders, all the stakeholders, on how they should proceed. You know, there are those, and we're in the camp, that believe that they should conform with what the law prescribes them to do, both the any regulations be consistent with the act, the structure, the purpose, the legislative history, and how the agency has implemented this section of the law historically. So I think that they're going to receive varying and differing views, and that they will make a determination at that point if to proceed and how to proceed.
What is the National Mining Association's view on that?
Well, we believe that there should be a replacement rule. But it should be limited to the authority that's provided by the statute. They went far afield with the existing rule under the Obama administration, but we believe that the legislative history and the statute requires that there be a system of emission controls applied at the individual source. That's where it differs from the Obama administration rule.
And this, Kathy Kowalski, is what you were talking about when you said at the fence line.
Correct.
Why, Bruce Watzman, is that preferable over the grid approach?
Well, it's preferable because then the utilities can better manage the technologies at that source. We think that's the preferable way and the historic way and the proper way in terms of what the statute allows them to do.
And when it goes by the grid, Kathy Ann, correct me, is that then it becomes the states are obligated to fulfill it at the state level, fulfill the federal requirements?
Yeah, the state as a whole has to meet that requirement, and it's up to the state how to go ahead and do that. The state could arguably go ahead and tell each plant, you have to come up to these particular standards. But as Bruce said, right now, they're not able to do that. And it could, you know, the state could then say, okay, we're going to instead have you cut back to here. We're going to have you guys do this. We're going to have you guys do that, and put together a package deal to try to make it. So it's an option on the part of the states that way.
And Bruce Watzman, what about the National Mining Association's stand on any regulation in regards to the U.S. role in the Paris Climate Agreement? Is there do you have a position on that?
During the lead up to the president's decision, communicated our view that the U.S. should withdraw from the agreement.
Why?
Well, we don't think it's that what the U.S. does should be dictated by other countries, number one. Where there are differing standards, it would have come into play immediately in the U.S. while there were provisions in there that would have allowed other countries, other large emitters like China and India, not to have to comply for many, many years, 10 years or more, and would have put the U.S. in an economic disadvantage.
Isn't the U.S. already in an economic disadvantage because we have better clean air laws and they've been in place for longer?
Well, I think to a degree we are, but we recognize that we want clean air. All of us desire clean air. Mm-hmm. What we think should happen first and foremost is that we should look at technology and where technology should allow us and enable us to improve beyond that which we've already approved. Allow technology to ripen to the point rather than imposing standards that can't be met by current technology.
And speaking of technology, there's that issue of technology when it comes to jobs in the coal industry, that technology or mechanization is largely responsible for taking so many jobs away from humans.
Well, I don't think that's as much as an issue today as it was in decades past.
That's a done deal now. That's not going to go back.
Pretty much so, yes.
And you don't see advances beyond what already exists to further mechanize the business?
Well, there's always a desire for new technology, both for productivity and, importantly, for safety. The industry, the producers work with those who supply product to the industry to always improve upon that. But I don't see any quantum leaps in terms of technology that's going to result in job reductions.
And the whole thing about clean coal versus dirty coal, do you see the industry pursuing the high sulfur coal? And you're saying that at the energy generation level, they're going to respond to that by building new technology to burn the coal cleaner.
Well, again, our hope is that as these regulations are unwound and the natural transition begins from the older plants to a new generation of plants, there is, in fact, new generation technology, supercritical and ultra supercritical, that burns the coal more efficiently and results in less emissions. So that already exists. Those plants, there are a few of them in the U.S., but those are being built around the globe. We're looking forward to the day where we begin that transition here in the U.S.
And any expectations about when that is?
Well, first we have to deal with the regulations and get those behind us so that that barrier is overcome.
You know, Kathy Ann jokingly referred to her grandson starting college or graduating from college by the time all of the litigation is over. What are your expectations, Bruce Watzman, for this process?
I don't know grandson.
He's 3 years old.
our hope is that this can be dealt with expeditiously. There's the need for certainty in the marketplace. It serves no one's interest to have this lack of certainty.
Okay. Well, Bruce Watzman, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Bruce Watzman is Senior Vice President of Regulatory Affairs for the National Mining Association. Also with us, Kathy Ann Kowalski, reporter for the Midwest Energy News. Kathy Ann will stay with us. We'll turn to the Ohio Environmental Council coming up. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can check out our Facebook page and post a question or comment there. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7. NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. This week, Environmental Protection Agency Director Scott Pruitt signed a measure to begin the process of repealing the Clean Power Plan. That's a signature policy of the Obama administration. The coal industry has cheered the move, while environmental groups say this is a dangerous step in the wrong direction. Still with us is reporter from Midwest Energy News, Kathy Ann Kowalski. And joining us now in the studio, Vice President of Policy and Energy at the Ohio Environmental Council, Trish Demeter. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
What did the Clean Power Plan get right, even though it never actually went into effect?
Well, first and foremost, it instituted the first ever carbon regulations on the power sector. It's a largely unaddressed area of regulation of a dangerous pollutant. And so that's the number one thing, is that it was a step in the right direction, and a big step in the right direction to help address climate change across the nation. The second thing is that it provided states with flexibility to take into account the unique status that some of these states have in terms of where they get their electricity from currently. And so that gave states some leeway in terms of designing a carbon reduction plan that integrated multiple resources, renewables, energy efficiency, nuclear, and also, improving the efficiency at existing natural gas and coal plants. So that flexibility gave states a lot of innovative ideas or creative license in terms of how they were going to reduce carbon emissions from the power sector overall.
You know, Kathy Ann Kowalski, besides the coal industry, was there very much, where was the opposition to the Clean Power Plan?
The opposition was coming from electric utilities, and it was also coming from a variety of states. States broke into two camps, some supporting the Clean Power Plan and some opposing it. Ohio was in the camp of those opposing it, as was EPA Director Pruitt when he was with Oklahoma.
The EPA Director Pruitt sued the EPA when he was the Attorney General of Oklahoma, and many positions there have been filled with people who've worked in the coal, gas, and oil industries. What, Kathy Ann Kowalski, do you make of Trump's EPA? I mean,
it is basically, I've heard people say that it is moving to dismantle a lot of the environmental regulations, and whether it will accomplish that, given the time frame of Trump's term in office, I'm not sure, but that seems to be where they want to head, is to undo a number of regulations that they see as restrictive when it comes to pre-existing industries.
There's a 60-day public comment period now that Scott Pruitt has signed this document beginning the repeal effort. Trish Demeter, what, as far as the Ohio Environmental Council is concerned, what do you say during this period?
We say move forward with the Clean Power Plan. It was a good plan, and or something just as strong. So the Trump administration, Administrator Pruitt, will have to put together a pretty smart legal team to defend what they will be more than likely putting forward, which will be a much weaker rule. It won't cut emissions as deeply as the Clean Power Plan would have. And so, during this time, it's not the opening of this rulemaking isn't a prescription that they will actually replace it. So,
right.
Yeah, so it's very, very vague and very open-ended at this point.
How do environmental groups that oppose the repeal effort coalesce at this time?
Well, we've been very active. The Ohio Environmental Council, along with many of our allies at the state and national level, have been active in the litigation on the stay and arguing the merits of the Clean Power Plan, and really arguing on some foundational U.S. Supreme Court rulings that give the EPA not just the authority to regulate carbon, but the obligation to do it.
And how does that work when it comes to an administration fulfilling that obligation?
Well, the law says that they have to. The Supreme Court has directed them to. So carbon regulations are inevitable. And this announcement by the Trump administration was very clever by not just repealing the Clean Power Plan, but instead saying that they will replace it with something, because there are some pretty strong legal precedents that very forcefully direct them to regulate this as a pollutant. It's harmful to humans, that's proven, and it endangers health and safety, and that's proven. So that's why they have to act eventually.
Well, the cleverness being that they can say they're going to do it, but there is no timeline associated with that.
Correct. It'll be a long, protracted process. There will be a lot of stakeholder engagement, but it is largely a delay tactic.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to Trish Demeter. She's Vice President of Policy and Energy at the Ohio Environmental Council. Also with us by phone, Kathy Ann Kowalski. She's a reporter for Midwest Energy News. We're talking about the announcement this week that the Trump administration will move forward with promises to undo Obama-era regulations that actually had never even gone into effect yet, so we're not sure what the impact would have been. But states were making headway on those even before they were enacted. Ohio was one of the leaders in that.
Yeah, Ohio was absolutely taking steps. The Ohio EPA, under the leadership of our current EPA director, as well as the PUCO, the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, under the leadership of Chairman Awesome Hawk and Craig Butler at the EPA, mm-hmm. were doing a lot of stakeholder engagement, quite frankly, to figure out what would be the best plan for the state of Ohio. And so there was some work. There wasn't anything that was hard, you know, on paper with the ink dry, for sure, but there were definite discussions and a process unfolding.
So what happens to all of that, Kathy Ann Kowalski, in Ohio and in other states?
In Ohio right now, that particular process is frozen. But at the same time, remember, we do currently have the renewable portfolio and energy efficiency standards in place. There's a fight going on yet again at the legislature. Mm-hmm. This has been coming up pretty much every year since 2013.
Where they froze those?
Well, 2013, there was an effort to weaken them a lot. 2014, they weakened them and then froze them for 2 years. 2016, they were fighting to try to pretty much extend the freeze indefinitely, and now there's this move to make the repealable renewable standards voluntary and weaken the energy efficiency standards more. But Governor Kasich has said that he's opposed to that. He wants the standards back. Industry in Ohio wants the standards back. The job numbers, I think, are somewhere around maybe 5,000 people in the state in the coal industry. That's if you include people at coal-fired power plants. But I think we're way up, many more times that, in jobs in the wind and solar industry, and if you include energy efficiency, you're over 100,000 people in the state of Ohio in clean energy industries.
And the clean energy industries ostensibly are going to weigh in on all of this as well.
Oh, yeah. They're going to weigh in on it. And, you know, frankly, the jobs in the coal industry are good-paying jobs, but uh-huh. the jobs in solar and wind are also very, very good-paying jobs.
Well, how does the Scott Pruitt said that it's not the job of the EPA to pick winners and losers in the energy industry. And I guess is the clean energy sector going to be a loser if this goes through?
I'm not sure you can say it will be a loser, but I think you can say that its growth will be delayed. And when you look at the environmental issues, which is what Pruitt is supposed to be dealing with, you have less progress made on trying to deal with climate change and mitigating climate change. And that's an issue that threatens Ohio when you look at extreme weather events, or you look at the fact that climate change, for example, is a factor that scientists have said plays a role in things like harmful algal blooms.
Yeah. What is coal's role in providing energy in Ohio now? Trish Demeter?
Yeah, Ohio coal accounts for about 59% of where Ohioans get their electricity from. It's quite a bit. But I will say that in the past 6 years, it's gone from about 78% to just under 60%. So there, that sector, the power sector, is already under pretty tremendous transformation, moving away from coal. There is a lot of natural gas development in the state. I think it's roughly 9,000 megawatts of natural gas-fired power plants are proposed or in the queue for approval in the state of Ohio. We've seen the renewable share inch up. We're at about 2.25%. And nuclear remain steady right around 13 to 14%. And so, you know, coal is still a big component of where Ohioans get their electricity, but it's rapidly changing. And there are tremendous market trends outside of environmental regulations on carbon that are putting a ton of pressure on those coal plants to retire. Many of them are very old, 50, 60 years old. And so, you know, as a baby boomer coal plant, they are getting ready to retire. And so, you know, any kind of miraculous technological innovation on clean coal, you know, bearing that, these are plants that are on their way out. And so the Clean Power Plan would have really helped to smooth the transition in by encouraging development of other technologies that we know are proven to produce power at an emissions-free, carbon-free power. We already know how to do that through wind and solar, hydropower, energy efficiency. And we don't have to wait for miraculous technological discoveries in clean coal. Clean coal has been something we've talked about for a long time, but it's never gotten to the phase where it is commercially viable or, you know, hitting that price point to make it make sense for the consumer.
Kathy Ann Kowalski, if the United States pursues this line of reasoning that the Trump administration has embraced in trying to repeal and working toward repeal of the Clean Power Plan, could it even, if it even wanted to, participate in the Paris Climate Agreement at this point?
Yeah, I mean, we still have ways of getting to those targets. It's not easy, and we'd likely fall short, or we could stay in the Paris Climate Agreement and revise our targets, which is what a number of people had suggested as an alternative to pulling out. Pulling out, as I recall, when I talked with the lead negotiator for that deal, she said basically there's a mechanism that it takes about 3 years before a country formally can withdraw anyway. So there's lead time built into that. The other issue, though, is, you know, in the meantime, other countries are taking a leadership position, and if the U.S. does indeed back out, it says something about the credibility of the U.S.
Why is the agreement characterized as being dictated to by other nations? I mean, I should have asked Bruce Watzman that, but Kathy Ann Kowalski, what's the thinking behind describing it that way? Because if it's an agreement, it's not a dictation, right?
Well, number one, it's an agreement. And number two, what sets the Paris Agreement apart is that each country picks its own targets. So, yes, it's an international agreement, but on the other hand, it's not as if China or Russia or some other country is saying, United States, you have to do this. The United States is the country that picked its own target.
It's just now the target's changed.
It's just now that the Trump administration wants to change that target or get rid of it entirely.
So, Trish Demeter, what is the Ohio Environmental Council's strategy going forward in a new era of coal-friendly EPA?
Well, litigation in this issue is our friend because, as I mentioned before, it's already very well established that the U.S. EPA must regulate carbon pollution. That is from a number of Supreme Court decisions. And so we will be fighting on those legal grounds because those legal grounds are very strong in our favor. So that is number one. Number two, we're going to, as a state-based organization focused here on the policies of Ohio, we're going to continue to advocate for a transformation of our electric portfolio. As you've mentioned, the fight over Ohio's clean energy standards is still alive and well. We are into like the fifth year of this
debate.
Not
exactly a friendly environment for the Ohio Environmental Council.
No, but I might remind you that we are on the winning side of this because we have the standards now. Yes, they took a hit. There are some provisions that have weakened them a little bit.
Like voluntary?
Right. Well, they are mandatory now.
Still.
Yeah. They are still mandatory, but there were some permanent law changes made during that legislation that froze them for 2 years mm-hmm. that have hobbled them a little bit. But all in all, the trends towards clean energy are unstoppable. We see more consumers opting for distributed renewable systems at their home or business, smaller wind farms, fuel cells, solar panels are becoming a big and real thing, very affordable, much more affordable than they were even 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so those trends, we think, are things that we need to be harnessing by state policies, so like the clean energy standards, like supporting Ohioans' right to generate electricity at their home or business, and also ensuring that utilities are continuing to move away from the coal assets that are aging and really need to be having a plan to transition them out.
Kathy Ann Kowalski, I heard a coal industry representative on NPR this morning say that they acknowledge the climate relationship, the relationship between climate change and fossil fuel burning coal plants. I mean, they get that. They acknowledge it. They don't think it's a Chinese hoax. They don't think it's some voodoo or anything. But how, does it even matter when the president and the EPA director both don't acknowledge it, don't embrace that notion? What happens?
Well, what happens is you have, again, the delay built in here. On the other hand, you have courts that are still going to have a role to play when these rules get challenged. I mean, Trisha's right on the law that delay is environmental groups' friend. On the downside, delay also means that there's longer time before you're actually cutting more of those emissions. At the same time, though, the other thing is that you have states around us in California that also have some renewable portfolio standards and energy efficiency standards. And one thing that comes to mind is, had the Clean Power Plan gone into force already, everybody would sort of be having to follow some sort of rules. As it is now, if there isn't as much pressure from that, that means that states that have these standards will have a competitive advantage in attracting new businesses that want clean energy. So the market forces are still going to be causing some changes to occur, but having the Trump administration opposed to it and denying climate change does not help.
Kathy Ann Kowalski, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
That's Kathy Ann Kowalski, reporter for Midwest Energy News. And Trish Demeter, thanks to you as well. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
Trish Demeter, Vice President of Policy and Energy at the Ohio Environmental Council. Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.